To the phones we go. JP in Plymouth Meeting. Good morning, JP.
Good morning, guys. How's it going, Ree? How you guys doing? Everybody, everybody having a good day?
Yeah, man. It's all good.
I'm on board with the Phillies. Let me tell you why. Because I said over the weekend, this is the best starting pitching I think I've seen since 2011.
I think it's better, JP.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
I do.
Wow, even with the five aces.
Close. Okay, well, it was four aces plus either Blanton or Worley, depending on what part of the year it was. I think it's better, and part of what I base that on, and this is maybe a little unfair, but I'll say it, I think Painter will be up at some point, and I think that will, like, put him over the edge.
No, I think it's amazing. I know they were called the four aces.
Yeah, they were called the four aces.
I don't know that we can count on Painter to be awesome this year.
No, I agree, James.
Like, it takes close to 2 years for guys to be, like, back to normal after Tommy John surgery. You know, I just...
All right, James, let me ask you a question. All right, here we go. And this will be a good poll question. Maybe we do it later in the week. Who do you believe in more to contribute this season for the Phillies? Painter or Nola?
Oh, it's not a great one.
No, I'm just asking. I mean, it could go either way.
Yeah, I don't know. Right. Honestly, probably Painter, I guess. I don't know. I'm really concerned about Nola.
Do you like Painter
more
than
Abel? Painter gave a great performance.
We're talking about the five here.
No, I know. All right, JP, I'm sorry.
Painter over Abel.
Let me ask him that in a second. JP, let me flip it back to you. Go ahead, bud. I know we keep cutting you off.
No. It's okay. It's all good. But, like, the people that, like, have been struggling of late have been producing. Like, I mean, they're a solid team. Look, and you guys said it earlier. There's going to be times where not every game or not every series is going to be sunshine and rose petals. There's going to be some downtimes. But this is a solid team. And right now, they're their best team in baseball.
Well, I don't know if they're the best team in baseball, but
I said they're the third best.
Oh, third best. I'm sorry.
There.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. No, well, yeah, factually, they have the third best record. That's correct.
That's the whole goal right
JP,
now,
give me a duo with a gap in there somewhere.
All right, I got to keep it local. I'm going to go DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
All right, give me the gap. What is it? What they ultimately accomplished?
Will Smith
went into acting with the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, and they tried to bring in DJ Jazzy Jeff, and he made his appearances once in a while.
Yep.
But Will Smith just took off.
I think it's a great answer, man. I think it's a really big-time answer. I mean,
I didn't even think it needed to be explained.
Well,
I just
wanted to find out. I mean, you know, yes, Will Smith.
One's Will Smith and one's DJ Jazzy Jeff.
I will say this, DJ Jazzy Jeff, and if he's listening, because he's from here, dude, I mean, this is no disrespect, because it was probably someone else's idea. I thought his character on The Fresh Prince was one of the worst characters ever in a show. It was a horrible, it was like, what are they doing? Why did they make him that?
What did they make him? I didn't see.
They made him aloof, kind of like not quite dorky, but just not like James.
How would you remember it? That's how bad it was.
Well, it wasn't that often. How would you sum up DJ Jazzy
dorky?
Jeff's character?
I don't know that
That's
he was dorky.
Cool.
No, I'm not saying
he
quite
just had
dorky.
A vibe. He was, you know,
aloof.
Sure, like kind of just, you know.
It wasn't funny.
No, I don't think it was as bad as you.
It stunk.
But.
I thought his character stunk in that show.
I never really thought about it.
Well, he didn't pop up that much.
Yeah.
Maybe he never really was comfortable doing whatever that was. We, you know, and therein lies the discrepancy that we're talking
Maybe.
About. Will Smith was comfortable in front of the camera and in that role, in that scene, and DJ Jazzy Jeff felt.
Well, if someone can sum up better than I did what his character was. Hit us up here. I just thought it was like just not funny and just not fun. But anyway, 215-592-9494. Let's talk to Keith right now. Keith, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. How are you today?
Good, buddy.
So I'm calling in because I have an answer for Amy from Villanova.
A game seven injury? All right, talk to me.
A game seven injury. Best player on the team.
Okay.
1970 New York Knicks, Willis
Reed.
Yeah,
but they won.
I know, but he was injured, came back in dramatic fashion, and won.
Well, yeah, no.
That's a pretty good answer.
It's an interesting answer.
I just kind of outshone Joe in Amy's eyes.
Well, I mean, maybe, if you want to call it significant. I mean, he scored 4 points.
Wow.
Walt Frazier had 39 points and 17 assists, but everyone talked about Willis Reed saving the day with his 4 points.
Yeah. That's substantial.
So Walt Frazier, by the way, got totally screwed in that.
The guy won that.
He was the best player.
He went for 39-17, and no one ever talks about him.
No.
But no, Keith, I know that, you know, I get it. The story is that Willis Reed gave them a tremendous emotional lift. I get that.
Yeah.
It's an interesting answer.
Nice. Nice job. He answered Amy from Villanova's question effectively.
I don't.
So does he win her hand?
No. Well, I still think Halliburton's a bigger injury, but because you know his team lost. But anyway,
yeah.
All right, Keith. Not a bad answer.
Good try.
Give me what you got for a duo.
You just don't want to lose Amy to this man.
Okay. Keith, what do you got, buddy?
How about for a duo? You got The Rock and Kevin Hart. In Central Intelligence.
Yeah, it's a good answer. They've made a couple together.
They have.
Jumanji.
Yeah, The Rock and Kevin Hart. All right. Boy, Kevin Hart is small, man. What is he, about 5'4"?
5'2", I think.
Is he really? Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I think he's like 5'2".
He is.
Wow. That is really, really.
How tall is Danny DeVito? Is he four?
Similar. He's like, no, he's like 5'2". He might be,
I would think
he might
less.
Be like five,
I think he might be under 5, but I don't know. I think on It's Always Sunny, I've heard him referred to as 4'10".
I would be surprised if he's 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
We can look it up. But
4'10", according to the internet. There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't think he'd get to 5. I mean, he's, you know.
That is petite.
All right, let's go to Ben in Millville. What's going on, Ben?
What's up, Joseph? How are you?
Doing well.
Yeah. How's the golf game coming?
You know what? I'm planning on playing hopefully twice this week before, hopefully, me and Fritz are playing on Sunday, but we're still waiting on word whether Sunday is the day. But I will be ready if it is. I hope it's blistering hot. And, dude, that fool's going to melt like frosting.
Are you afraid to jump off the side of a shallow end of a pool?
What does this have to do with anything?
I'm just wondering.
I can deal with the heat.
Just the shallow end of a pool. Just walk off the side of you know, like three and a half feet.
You're not supposed to jump into the shallow end of the pool.
Okay. But no, you... But you can.
Well, I wouldn't.
Just jump in feet first to the shallow end.
I do not jump into a pool.
You've never
lake,
done this.
Ocean. I don't do it.
Never in your whole life.
I think I did it once or twice ever. You know, years ago when it's like.
And it was scary or something?
Yes. For me, it's scary.
Because it was a. Were you on a diving board?
I think I went off the diving board one time in my life.
You think you're going to jump and drown?
Well, anything's possible.
You won't.
It scares me.
You'll float. Your body will float back up.
I'm just telling you, it scares me. I mean,
his body type, definitely.
Come on, Ben.
Dude, we're trying to help him.
That ain't cool. All right, Ben, what do you got on our fighting Phils?
Fighting Phils, I mean, you're exactly right. Nothing's changed, but, like, why not? Like, they're more better than...
Why not? I'll tell you why not. Because they're going to have their bad slumps again, and people are going to turn on them, and you'll probably be one of them.
Heck, if they lost this weekend, hell yeah, I would have been one of those people, you know, with a pitchfork. The world's ending. We're
one game different.
Fans.
I have never seen a season in which people have been in and out more, I think, than this one season.
Well, and that's
in
what
half
the
year.
Previous 3 years have done to them.
You're
that's
right.
Why? They have a shorter leash.
You at 1,000,000%.
Yeah.
And we identified this in April. It was very obvious that people were going to get in a bad mood very quickly and a good mood, you know, to a decent degree because they do have a really good team. And it's just, it's like a yo-yo this season. It's really been an odd year.
Because we know what could happen. They could think, they could go cold. Anything and everything could happen.
Well,
and
that's true.
We're waiting for it, but we don't want it to happen. We want a long, red, deep red, bright red October.
And we've got a great chance at that happening.
I'm with you. All right, Ben, give me an answer, a duo with a gap between them.
Common Sense and Joe DiCamera.
Oh,
I like that.
Oh, you hurt my feelings.
It is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Wednesdays at 3. We used to be undefeated. Now we're 0-2 when Larry Anderson joins us on Wednesdays the night before. Bad streak, LA. We got to do something about that.
I'm sorry, Larry Anderson can't get to the phone right now.
So,
what are you guys doing to me?
Well, what are you doing to us? You know. So let me ask you this, LA.
Man.
You were not on the broadcast last night. Stock was on the broadcast, but I'm wondering if you could do a little bit of acting and make pretend you are on the broadcast. It's 2-0. It's the top of the ninth. Sosa's on first.
Please tell me you were not. You don't have a. You got your some kind of microphone in my house. I know you do. Now I know you do because I know where you're going.
I just want to know what you would have said when Rojas swung 2-0.
How did you know? I'm serious. I am dead serious.
It's all I can think about, man. It's all I can think about is what was LA's. What would LA's reaction have been?
I was got to be. My reaction was, and I believe I said to my wife, I said to Christian, I'm like, excuse me, I got something choking me. And it's not her. I said, are they not teaching baseball anymore? Like before guys get to the big leagues or even when they get here? My question is, was anything even said to them? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. But maybe it's analytics. I don't know. But it says, hey, go ahead and swing 2-0. But from a baseball standpoint and watching a game, being in the game for 50-plus years, and I'm pretty sure I'm not the Lone Ranger, you're 2-0, you're in the ninth inning, you're down a run, you got a man on, make him throw you a strike. But that didn't happen.
No.
And my thought was, like, don't they teach this? Or did we not have coaches in the minor leagues anymore or at any level that played the game? That drives me nuts. What, can't we teach this stuff? I used to talk to Dallas Green all the time about we need to go back to baseball 101 and have classes in spring training for the young players, for the new draftees, and have classes and teach them how to play the game. Now, analytics changes that a lot, I'm sure. But teaching how to play the game like we were taught, that's just a no-brainer. Don't swing the bat there. But you know, if it's Schwarber, if it's Harper, somebody like that, you get a cookie. Okay, different. Johan Rojas, 2-0, a ball at your neck high. What are you doing? Why aren't you swinging the bat? That was my thought.
Well, especially
I wasn't on the air.
Right. Well, especially with Trey Turner up next, and there was some debate on the station today as why wasn't he told not to swing? It feels like an elementary thing almost that if you have to tell him not to swing there, to your point, there just seems to be a miscalculation somewhere else that he thought that was the best thing to do. And, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, if you send Stott up there to pinch hit, I can guarantee you 100 times out of 100, Bryson Stott does not swing at that pitch. Like,
no.
There's no way he swings down, you know, down up 2-0 in that scenario.
Nope. There's no way. And it just, that's my whole thing. It's like, I don't know if the last time anybody ever put a take on for a hitter, I don't know, maybe 40 years ago.
Right, yeah.
But that's 3-0, 2-0. I mean, sometimes I think we just take for granted that all these players, these younger players, know how to play the game. Obviously, for me, they don't. They don't know. They don't, you know, I mean, I can go over all kinds of stuff. Like, young, I don't know. But somebody, wouldn't they think that's taught at the minor league level? By the time guys get to the big leagues, and I know guys go through the minor leagues a lot quicker nowadays, but by the time they get here, shouldn't they have been taught? Shouldn't they have been told things like that? I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe I'm way off base. Maybe I'm way out of bounds, but I mean, that frustrated me more than anything. More than anything. I just, you know, they got good pitching. They got good arms in the bullpen. Who knows? It might not make one bit of difference. But, like, that we will never know. At least, it's almost like, you know, give yourself a chance. If you're thinking right, you give yourself a chance. If you're not thinking right, you got no chance. And that there to me was not thinking right, and there was no chance.
And if he gets on with Sosa at second, all of a sudden, if Trey Turner hits one into a gap, you're up 2-1. You know,
right.
if you have two guys who can run like that on the base paths, you're a lot closer. You're certainly a lot closer to tying the game, and you become a lot closer to winning the game as well.
Providing they don't get picked off.
Yeah, for sure. So the good thing from last night, Ranger Suarez has been, this is shocking to say, with Zach Wheeler on the staff and Chris Sanchez and Jesus Luzardo, since he's come back, Ranger Suarez has been the best pitcher on the Phillies. Like, what have you seen from him? What did you see specifically that last night that is allowing him to succeed at the level he's succeeding at?
His command of pitching inside to the right-handers, although that was the one thing that cost him the game, you know, the one pitch, you know, throwing a cutter. And I'm a little surprised at throwing a cutter, like, on 3-2. Because, and I've said this a million times, if a left-hander to a right-handed hitter, if you're throwing a breaking ball in, you want to start it at the corner and break it in off the plate. For me, I don't want to start it in the middle of the plate and bring it to the corner, because that's taking it right through nitro zone. And especially in Houston with that Crawford box there, that the short porch and left. I mean, you're just asking for a pop fly to go in there and you know, he went the other way, hit it well the other way, but it was a pitch that he wanted in. He didn't get it in there. But that's so many of his pitches he's getting in there. He's throwing into the right-handers. He's moving them off the plate. He's using his off-speed stuff away. Just the way he's mixing and matching his pitches has been just Ranger-like from what we saw at the start of last year, the first half of last year. But we've seen it. We've seen him do this at numerous times. You know, even before last year, when he's on, he's got it all going, and he just knows how to pitch. Nothing fazes him. He's a great fielder. He fielded his position. He just cool, calm, and collected out there. I mean, it's fun to watch him pitch. He's not an overpowering guy, but he pitches like he's an overpowering pitcher.
He almost at times reminds me of Greg Maddux. It's crazy to say, yeah, but the way that Maddux didn't have overpowering stuff, but just put the ball in the exact right spot that the batter cannot make the decision about whether it's a ball or a strike. And, you know, either they make the decision too late or they take it. And, you know, and I wonder how many called third strikes Rangers gotten this year, because it seems like there's a lot of them.
Oh, a whole lot. And
yeah,
he lives on the edge, which he has to. I mean, but he knows how to. He's got that the command. This command is tremendous. It's not, I mean, a lot of guys at this level don't even have control, meaning that they can't throw, you know, 8 out of 10 strikes in the pitches in the strike zone. But when I talk about command, I'm talking about not that command is the next step up from control. Command is where you can throw the ball where you want in the strike zone. And Ranger can do that. Excuse me. And when you can do that, you're going to have success. And he just proves that. You don't have to throw 98. You don't have to throw 100. You can pitch with where he's at 93, 94, 92. If you know how to pitch, you can pitch it at just about any velocity. I truly believe that. He's showing it.
Well, he's making himself a lot of money. I can tell you that right now.
Sure.
This keeps up. You know, it's not a bad year to have what looks like your best year.
Yeah.
So Ryan Kirkering, since Alvarado has gone down, Kirkering has been good. He's gotten shots to close, and he seems to have thrived there. I'm sure we've asked you this before. I don't remember your opinion on it. The idea of a guy knowing that he is the closer. Rob Thompson has not really done a ton of that. Do you think Kirkering would thrive, like your thought about knowing that is your inning, that you are the shutdown guy? Do you think Kirkering is sort of earning that, and do you think he would thrive if he knew that?
I think he's no question thriving now. He's throwing the ball great. To be put in that position day in and day out, I think it remains to be seen. But I don't think there's any question he can. I mean, he's showing that he can, pitch deep in the back end of games, back into the pen. Whether it's the one thing, and I've said this before too, it's the difference between where he's pitching, where he's been pitching prior to this, you know, as a setup guy or something. The setup guy and the guys before him, the middle guys and the setup guys, they have the big tightrope across the foul poles from right to left. The setup guys and the middle guys have a safety net, and that's the closer. The closer, he doesn't have that safety net. And that, if you can handle that mentally, I mean, if you think about it just yourself going across a tightrope at, you know, 20 feet high, whatever. But, I mean, go across a skyscraper, we'll end the thing, and it's the difference. I mean, from the mental aspect, you have to be able to trust yourself and know that you can get it done without somebody having to come in and help you out. And people might think, well, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's just another inning. It's not just another inning. It's an old pitching coach of mine once said the first inning and the last inning are like the takeoff and landing of an aircraft carrier. I mean, the two most critical parts of it is the start and the end. And that's, you know, to me, the landing on the aircraft carrier is the ninth inning. That's something that you have to be ready for mentally. There's stuff that there's not even a question about his stuff being able to do that. Then it comes down as a command there, consistently. Can he consistently make his pitches? And he's, I don't know, to me, of late, he's showing he can. Yeah. But again, if you're going to be in that position every day, can you do it every day? Can you pitch 2 out of 3 days? Can you pitch 3 out of 4 days? I don't think we do that, but you know, are you able to take the ball regularly, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I think you can.
Yeah, when you look at this team overall, LA just about at the halfway mark. I think, 79 games? So they're almost at the halfway mark. Trade deadline is still over a month away. We almost do this thing weekly. Sometimes we make the mistake of doing it daily, of sort of reassessing this team after games. But with an overall view of them. So I would look at this towards the trade deadline. You feel good about where the team is at as we get towards that big decision-making day or weekend for Dave Dombrowski as far as what he should be doing at the trade deadline to either improve this team or stand pat? Like, how do you feel about where the team is at? The pitching is great. You like the lineup. You think there's areas that we still need to get better at?
I think more consistency from the offense. Where to me, I mean, obviously the bullpen losing Alvarado, getting him back, I think would be huge. To have another arm like that's a special arm too. But I think besides that, on top of that, the offense. It just, when we face good pitching, we don't do a whole lot. Now a lot of other teams don't either, but for me, I think because of the way the rest of the league is, I think we're fine. I think we're in a good spot. Now, can we get better at the trade deadline? I certainly think so. I would hope so. But there's a lot of teams in the same position.
Position, yeah.
They want this. They want another reliever. They want another arm. Or they want another bat. And everybody's vying for that. It's like, well, who's willing to give up some prospects? Who's willing to make the deal to try and make it happen? And again, there's no guarantee, you know, that somebody coming in is going to make that difference. You certainly hope they do, but you know, it's we've seen in the past it doesn't always work out. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But I think because of this, there's nobody running away with anything.
There's
really not. And because of that, I think we're in a pretty good spot right now. That's my feeling. I still think we can always get a little better, maybe a lot better.
Yeah, there's a bunch of teams right in that 44, 45, 46 mm-hmm. win range that the Phils are in right now. And the Alvarado thing's funny because I keep forgetting that we do have him for
the last
month and a half of the season, you know, which at the very least will save you a little bit. It doesn't help you in the postseason, but maybe workload-wise, it can save some of the guys a little bit.
I think, to me, from experience, a perfect example was 93 when it felt like Mitch Williams and David West and myself were pitching every day.
Yeah.
I mean, it seemed like the first half. And then we got Roger Mason. And, man, he made a huge difference, I think. By the end, he was maybe our best reliever because there was three guys that didn't have a whole lot of gas left. And I was certainly one of them. You know, so you do that, you can. I think that's a great point that you have somebody to take some of the heat off of the guys in the back end, and somebody an arm that, you know, you're not forced to use the same guys over and over and over and over.
Yeah,
and I think that's a good point.
All right, LA. Well, boy, if they don't win next Tuesday with you coming on Wednesday, we're going to have a serious talk about your placement during the week. You know. So let's get back on track next week, okay?
I would appreciate that, fellas.
All right. Thank you, Larry.
All right, LA.
There he is, the great Larry Anderson. Dude, when I asked him about the Rojas, he knew what I was going to ask him.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't want me to ask him because he couldn't. You can hear L.A. So there's like a limit. You know how sometimes they'll put on a car, you can put a limiter so the car can't go above a certain mile an hour. Mm-hmm. There's a limiter on L.A.'s brain.
They do that on golf cars.
Yeah, about how like negative he knows he can be. And you can hear his brain bouncing up against the limiter when you ask him about the why didn't he take there?
Yeah.
You know, I can only imagine what LA was doing.
He
just
hates bad baseball.
Yeah, he does. Well, it was dumb.
Bad baseball.
Yeah. 215-592-9494. Matt in Mount Laurel. You're on WIP. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Spike, Mike, and Jack, thanks very much for taking my call. Good afternoon, man.
Good afternoon, Matt.
Thank you, guys. I wanted to just spend 1 minute, and I'll be quick here. As I told Jack when he screamed, I'm a Rutgers basketball fan for 50 years.
Wow.
Okay.
And before you pity me and feel sorry for me, my freshman year at Rutgers was the year that they went to the Final Four, where they were among the best teams in the East Coast for 4 years while I was there. So I've been a loyal fan of Rutgers basketball. So this year, it was a year of a lot of hype and a lot of hope with two freshman five stars coming in. And I'm not going to try to convince anybody there in the studio or your listening audience as to whether East Bailey is the man and the player that the Sixers should take, because I'm not sure how he fits in exactly with the Sixers. But what I want to do in this 1 minute here is just try to dispel some of the sentiments and feelings and rumors about East Bailey and what I saw in him. I saw every game he played this year but one, the notorious loss to that powerhouse at Kennesaw State that wasn't televised, and it was an away game. What I saw in East Bailey is he's a young man. He's 18. As we know, there are 18-year-olds who are going on 25, and there are 18-year-olds going on 15. He fits in the latter category, quite honestly, guys. But that young attitude a little bit, also that boyish attitude he has, is also a great attribute he has. He's enthusiastic. He actually would sit there on the bench during timeouts and listen to the coaches. He would listen to his players. He watched. There were moments during the season when he was asked to play every position but point guard. And the only reason why he didn't play point guard is obviously with Dylan Harper. Dylan Harper was the natural point guard. But when Dylan Harper was out, either due to the flu or injuries, he couldn't play point guard because there was nobody else to pass to. He was asked to play center in the Big Ten, and he played the position beautifully. He is amazing talent. He's got tremendous upsides. And I just see him as being a young man who does need some coaching. And unfortunately, as you know, in these 50 years I've been following college basketball, it's changed so much, man.
Yeah.
Coaches can't develop players anymore. They rent them. And I wish East Bailey, for many reasons, could play another year in college and he'd develop a little bit better. But he's got so much upside. And lastly, I just want to say this. I think you, the fans know there, and the listeners know, that Dylan Harper was asked to throw in the first pitch for the Yankees. So that image of East Bailey in a Mets uniform, it was not done to say that he wants to play for New York. It was a Rutgers move to try to tap some of the Wall Street NIL money along with Dylan Harper. That's what that move is for.
Yeah. Oh, for and, sure. And by the way, nobody in San Antonio will care that Dylan Harper threw a first,
pitch for the Yankees.
You know, so... Yeah. I largely agree with I understand what you're saying. I think that the thing that is tough in the NBA now is that there are a lot of players, especially if they're in Ace Bailey's situation, where he is skilled, but he's going to need a lot, where the first contract in the NBA ends up being like your second and third year in college, mm-hmm. where like they spend their and when you're running an NBA team, you have to think about, I have 11, if you're trying to win, I have $11 million a year on my cap dedicated to a guy that I don't think is going to be good for his entire first contract, or certainly not contributing to a winning team. So that... Like, there's this whole thing with draft picks where there's like three things you think about. One is, what is their ceiling? Two is how likely are they to reach their ceiling? And three is how likely are they to reach their ceiling on the team that they get drafted by? Because there are a lot of situations. Who knows if Kawhi goes somewhere else and doesn't end up in the San Antonio system where he is? Or if, you know, if Tyrese Halliburton never gets traded to the Pacers and ends up having to split a backcourt with De'Aaron Fox's entire career.
Right.
Like, there's so many different factors that go into it that you could look at a guy like Ace Bailey. And if he goes to a great situation, he could be an all-star in 6 years. If he goes to the wrong situation, he could end up in the NBA for 10 years, never playing on a winning team, never realizing his potential, never becoming a great player. So I think you bring up good points. I don't think any of the stuff that has come up about him has meant he is a bad guy. I don't think we've heard anything about him being a bad guy or a bad teammate. I do think there is some question about whether he has any desire to be a role player in the beginning of his career. And I think that is an important question for whoever is drafting him to answer.
Spike, I think you're spot on in many respects, but I'm not so sure that you're right that he doesn't want to be a role player. I think he just wants to play the game. And he's willing to listen to and do whatever the coaches need to do. Because that's what I saw with him this past year.
Sure.
Mike, I really did. And again, as I said to you, I'm not sure he is a good fit. And I'm not so sure that he's going to be a star in the NBA. I have no idea. But what I know is I just know that he would be an attribute on the court and in the locker room based upon his social media exposure, as well as his time there on the court and on the bench.
All right, Matt, appreciate you checking in, man. And God bless you for 50 years of Rutgers basketball.
I'll tell
our friends Jerry Recco and Chris Carlin that you're there.
Yeah,
because they are friends of ours. So, all right, Matt, thanks so much, man.
Thank you, too, Spike.
There he is.
Yeah, dozens of them.
What's that?
There's
dozens of huge Rutgers fans.
Yeah.
Well, okay, but from an, like, you know, from a, I mean, I don't want to get deep into Rutgers basketball, but if you're one of their major donors or something, you spend all that money for Dylan Harper and Ace Bailey, and they under 500. Like, what a disastrous season for you know what I mean?
I agree.
What are we spending? They're only here for a year.
Yeah,
you know. All right. Well, there is another draft coming up.
That's right.
And that draft is Friday.
Are you going to do YouTube Big Board for that?
Yeah, Friday.
Yeah.
YouTube Big Board Friday of NHL draft prospects.
And your hockey expertise is JV, right?
JV, sophomore year, I think it was, of high school. I was terrible.
Okay.
I couldn't stop. I didn't know how to stop on ice skates.
Seems like a problem.
It was a lot of cross-checking, as I mentioned. Mr. Stone, our coach, grabbed me by my face mask and pushed it into the boards because he was so mad that I would not stop cross-checking.
Child abuse.
Back when men were men.
Yes. So speaking of that draft, Flyer, it is Wednesday, and 3:30 is coming up, and Flyers and 50 with Broads is next, and we will get Broads' big board for Friday. That's what I've been told, that Broads will have his big board for Friday's draft.
He brought a hockey stick in.
He always brings it. Now the bit is just
having props.
It's growing. Yes.
Good.
I like props. So Broads joins us next. 215-592-9494. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.
Yeah, the hoot works for me. Tell you what also works for me. Fritz and I starting this competition on Sunday. Get the loss out of the way early, and then have to win three or four. That's the plan. 7:20 on Monday is when we will inform everybody who has won between me and Fritz. We play our golf match on Sunday at 11:10 a.m. All right, so as we broadcast from Borgata, we've all been in public restrooms many, many, many times.
Can't wait to see where this is going.
Yep. All right. You're going to get a guest, James. So I just had a first-time ever experience in a bathroom.
Ooh. Oh, boy.
Which is saying something because, you know, we've all had many bathroom experiences. And there's
especially.
I especially.
Yeah.
I do go more than the average bear.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, we got Jody Mack today in for John. We got Devin here. We got no Rhea, we got no John, but we got Jody, Devin, and Seltzer. You each get one guess at something that I just experienced in a bathroom for the first time. Yeah, I know. It gets a little uncomfortable.
That's it?
That's all you
You're
get.
Not giving us any more information than that?
It involved somebody else.
All right, I'm going to say someone tried to shake your hand in the bathroom.
Okay, no, not a bad guess. Not a bad guess.
Someone never recognized you and wanted to take a selfie with you in the bathroom.
No, but you're getting closer.
Jody,
no,
you're
up. Selfie, no handshake.
This was a very unique thing. I'll go as far as to say this will probably never happen to me again the rest of my life, and it is possible it has never happened to anyone else before in human history.
Whoa!
What?
It is possible.
You just went big time with this.
It is possible.
Did someone offer to zip you up?
So, I don't know, Jody, that's a... You're right. I mean,
that
other
is
than
a good guess considering the parameters you gave.
Yeah, other correct. Than a parent with a a 3-year-old, right? That that does not happen to the human adult. The answer.
Hey, you need a zip up.
Yeah. The answer is.
Can I lend a hand?
So I was in the urination variety of going to the bathroom, and there was somebody in a stall listening to our show,
ooh.
And I heard my voice. Because there was a delay, and I heard our show on delay on the Odyssey app and my voice from last segment while I was going to the bathroom. This guy's in the stall listening to us.
Wow, that's crazy.
That is really funny.
Right?
And you said...
I said nothing.
Nothing.
I said nothing.
First of all, definitely happened in human history.
I really hope he is in the bathroom still listening and is listening right... Hello, sir.
Hello,
sir. I hope it's going well in there.
Can you imagine that? I mean, it was really... A strange moment of my life.
And what a plug for the Odyssey app. I mean, you can truly
it
listen to it anywhere.
Everywhere.
It really does. All right, phone calls we go. Great being a poor God and wonderful having you with us on this Friday morning. Entering a summer weekend. We're not quite a third the way through the summer, but we're getting close to that, I guess, because 4th of July is coming up soon. Paul in Havertown. Good morning, Paul.
It was me in the stall. I've been on hold.
Nice, Paul.
Paul, hope everything came out okay, buddy.
Oh, yeah. So listen, as far as winning golf against Fritz,
yeah.
Do you have anybody that is coming around making sure you guys are keeping proper score?
So I thought about that. As of now, no. I think what we'll have to do is me and Jack will have to get a few ground rules set before we start. Like off the tee, if you hit a ball into the woods,
is it a drop? Is it a whatever?
Yes, exactly.
Strokes,
if you can tell for sure it went in, maybe you re-hit from the tee. But if you're not sure, you go up there. Like you got to work through that stuff.
Well, okay, but like anything else, everybody says they're this handicap, they're that handicap, but nobody's being watched on TV. So you guys are going to be probably horrible, both of you. But if you take your time and instead of hitting a 1-wood, hit a 3-wood. And you just try to keep it straight down there, because Fritz is probably going to try, unless he's listening, he's probably going to try to crush it. You just keep hitting it straight, you'll win.
Well, I appreciate that. Look, Paul, he is a better golfer than me. That's pretty clear based on how he plays.
Golfers stink.
Golfers can... No, listen, in 9 holes, I could win.
It is true. Your best case is he's just off for a day.
Of course.
And
there's a lot of water.
Or you don't crush it, and you just keep hitting it straight.
I know.
A par 5, if it's 10, it'll probably be even up.
Wow.
I'm telling you, because think about it. If he's crushing it and it goes out of bounds, well, then he's dropping 3.
Yeah, but your thing is predicated on he keeps messing up. I mean, just know this. He normally shoots mid-80s. I normally shoot 105. So the chances that one of us keeps messing up is a lot more than I'm the messer-upper.
Yeah, but if you're not trying to crush it and you're just trying to keep it, okay. You go to the
range. I do think Paul's right. You shouldn't be going for distance. You should be going to make sure you just get on the fairway every
steady
time.
Steady wins the race.
Yes.
Look, I told you, Fabian War. I'm going to do what George Washington did to the British, outlast them. I mean, that's it. I'm going to try to outlast them.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Devin, real quick, do you consider the Phillies a slugging team?
What?
Playing small ball these days, or what do we consider the Phillies these days?
She's saying what they were.
Yeah,
not what they are, what they were.
They certainly are not, a slugging team right now or this season really at all.
But do you think that came with the change in strategy as far as, playing a little bit small ball? At least that's what they're
saying. I think it plays into what Rob Thompson said after the game last night and what he said throughout the season, that they're trying to do too much at the plate. I think that comes from... I don't want to say actively trying to play small ball, but trying not to chase as much, because we know that that's been a problem.
But, Paul, I think some of this also comes with age on the negative side.
Yes,
as a, for instance,
JT's
a decline. Take Bryce. guys, Bryce Harper, when he was healthy. The problem is he might not really be like healthy. Bryce Harper, early Phillies, and Bryce Harper, Nationals. You know, the Bryce Harper that's won two MVPs, I mean, he wasn't playing like that. Right? Come on.
No, I hear you.
That's a problem.
It seems like we're more confused than we don't really have answers.
Well, they may just not be that good offensively. Paul, give me an answer, pal, for a moment in a show or a movie where a character realizes something.
Kaiser Sose.
Already said.
Fight Club.
Oh, great answer.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like that one.
I got to go back and watch it because I don't even know what you guys are talking
about.
Well,
we won't tell you then.
Really?
Wait.
It's such
didn't
a
watch
great,
Fight Club?
Great
I did. Like the whole premise.
Yeah, I watched it one time. It was probably one of those times I was tired.
Okay. Great.
You never know.
It's awesome.
James, come on, man. All right, let's go to Ed. That's awesome. Let's go to Ed in Phoenix.
You know how much that annoys me.
Eddie, how are you, pal?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
Ed, do you remember Eddie the Eagle?
Oh, yeah. They made
a
movie
not.
About Eddie
movie.
The Eagle. Yeah.
Let's find out if Jody Mack remembers Uncle Eddie Savitz. Remember that guy, Jody?
Not good.
Dirty dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, not good at all.
Yeah, we don't want to go down the Eddie Savitz. What were we just talking? Oh, Joe DeCamera in the bathroom.
Oh,
yeah.
Come on.
Where has this show gone?
Don't compare me to Eddie Savitz.
Joe DeCamera, Tales of the Men's Room, and Ed Savitz.
Come on.
Make sure you remember this when you're looking for Drop of the Week.
Oh, no.
This is Segment of the Week.
No. All right, hello, Ed.
Hello, guys. So, real quick on the Sixers, I think we all dodged a bullet by not drafting Con Knipple to avoid Mr. Hermanini and Hushmandaze trying to pronounce his name for like five
that
or
was
six
TJ
years.
Hushmandaze. Look, I will say when the Sixers didn't take Con Knipple, I was very grateful that we don't have to say Con Knipple.
We just
like,
could have called him Con Air and it would have been awesome. It would have been fine. Con Air. Boom.
Yeah, talk about twist. So with the Phillies, I think of a scene from The Sopranos, where Ralphie's asking Tony what to do with Jackie Jr., and Tony says, whatever is done should be done in a timely fashion.
Yeah.
And something has to be done right now, be it call up Carl Crawford, make a trade.
Or Justin.
God, you know, God help Dombrowski if he tries to give us another Austin Hayes situation. Like, some move has to be made within the next 2 weeks. And I don't know if it's firing Kevin Long or some inflection point, because this is starting to get pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, here's the only thing I'll say, man. It doesn't have to happen in the next 2 weeks because the trade deadline obviously is in about 4 weeks. I know we want it to happen in the next 2 weeks. We want it to happen in the next 2 minutes. But I wouldn't bank on it. And the reason I would say it doesn't have to, you know, they will still probably at the trade deadline be in a position to be one of the playoff teams. And when this thing is over, they will probably be a playoff team. So, you know, it doesn't have to happen immediately, but I hope it does. And they are playing with some fire because they're now only 3.5 games up on a playoff spot. And, you know, right now the Mets have home field, have the division, which means the Phillies are, as of now, playing on the road in a best of two if the playoffs started tomorrow, on the road in a best of two. Well, actually,
not necessarily on the road.
No, my fault. But in a best of two. I'm sorry, yeah.
You're singing the song I've been singing for weeks now, patience, patience, patience. Yeah. I will say this, though. If Dombrowski gets beaten to somebody, if there is a trade that comes down and the guy is a bat who could fit in and somebody else pulls the trigger before he does this week, next week, whatever, then he gets scrutinized for that.
Yeah.
If you want to be patient, that's cool. But don't lose out. Don't miss out. Don't get trumped. That scares me a little bit.
Well, I'll say this. My guess is if that occurs, it'll probably be because Dombrowski just doesn't go all in with a certain prospect. Like, I don't think one of these 15 players that's going to get traded, or that might even be high, is going to get traded without Dombrowski involved in it. I just think he would turn it down because he would say this isn't worth the prospect you want for that player. But I got to believe, and I'd be incredibly disappointed if Dombrowski's not in on those 15 players you'd consider, right?
What I worry about is making like a minor move, whether it's, you know, a relief pitcher who they, you know, hope can be a fixer-upper, and then saying, well, Bryce Harper's returning from IL, from his injury, and that's technically a deadline move. And Aaron Nola might come back, and that's a deadline move. And Andrew Painter might come. Like, I want them to bring in fresh, new, both arms and bats, like at least one of both, and not use, you know, these guys coming back from injury or being called up as, you know, an excuse for a quote-unquote deadline piece.
All right, Ed, I agree with that, Devin. Ed, I got to get to drop of the week here, my man. Give me a moment in a movie or a show with a realization.
When Chris realizes that the Armitage family is evil and Get Out.
Oh, yeah, great answer.
All right. Chelsea, you're going to have to ultimately pick, as you know all the
movies. Yeah, Get Out, haven't seen.
Yeah, I don't know them all. All right, I do know.
You guys should see Get Out. It's fantastic. Okay.
Oh, and two, here's the pitch, swing and a miss. Slider right over the heart of the plate. And Abreu strikes out the Phillies, heart of the order, 1-2-3 for the ninth inning. And the Astros sweep the Phillies, who manage one run in three games. And today fall in a 2-1 final.
Here we're back.
We are back.
The music's appropriate here. Welcome on in, everyone. It's the Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Gillo, you guys with us. 215-592-9494. Swept out of Houston.
Blech.
That was disgusting. Offensive Blech. Baseball for 3 days. All right, a lot to get into today. Kyle, of course, behind the glass. You guys with us. 215-592-9494. Scott Fransky will join us as the Phillies head to Atlanta for the weekend. He'll join us at 12. We're going to puck it up at 1 o'clock. Broads will be with us. Hunter Brody getting ready for his Flyers draft party tonight. The Flyers with the draft tonight. So we're excited for that, and Broads will join us later in the show. We'll get to you people. Sixers draft another winner last night. So a lot to get to, but Hugh, good morning. As we were half kidding, half not yesterday, as we ended the show and said, will the Phillies score a run today? Well, they got one. That was enough. Good morning, Hugh.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, Philadelphia. Had fun yesterday, Ed.
In Seattle?
Seattle was cool. Yeah. Kelsey's thing.
How you doing today?
Reflective.
Okay.
A little reflective.
On the Phillies, on life?
A little bit of Phillies and how it's going. And lost some car keys this morning.
A little pop-pop moment this morning for you?
Lost some car keys.
You know where they are, right?
In the garbage.
Well, I think Skip took them. He did a wellness check on your house, and then conveniently the keys are missing.
You know, I thought about that. I refuse to believe that.
Call the HOA. Ask them.
Yeah.
I will say this.
Well, isn't Skip the head of the HOA?
Yeah, we should actually call the HOA live on air.
No, I will say this, though, because, you know, when you get to a certain, well, y'all don't know, because y'all ain't there yet.
Not yet.
But when you get to a certain age, you like a routine that you like to follow. You know, so I normally put my keys in three places. The table in the kitchen, the table upstairs, or the nightstand beside me.
Yeah.
So that no matter what.
They're one of those spots.
Yes. For whatever reason, this morning, getting ready to go to work, no car keys.
Yeah, we got the text at like 8:40. Can't find my keys.
Like I'm scrambling, I'm stressing. Trying to figure out, didn't you know how, as an older adult, you sit there for a moment, you know, well, you don't know, and you try to retrace your steps from the day. And I remember I went to the mailbox. So I obviously I had it when I came from Seattle.
Yeah.
Because I drove home.
Well, the truck's there. So yeah.
Yes. And I went to the mailbox. And in order to get in the mailbox key is on the keys to the truck.
So you needed your keys then.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I get out the truck, and I take the boxes, and I go in the house. I don't need a key to get in the house, but the keys are in my pocket. So I go in the house and do all the stuff, drop the boxes off and everything. So now I'm thinking, okay, did I inadvertently throw away the keys? Like, no, I don't think I did that. But the bottom line is this. Don't have my keys. That's the bottom line.
You're here, though. You made it.
I made it to work because my roommate brought me to work this morning.
Yeah, you got here, which is great. And that's the most important thing. All right, Hugh, you said the word bottom line, right? The bottom line.
Bottom line.
Yeah, the bottom line is this offense just gave us a baseball tragedy for 3 days. To waste that starting pitching for 3 days.
One run.
Every
offensive player in the Phillies should be ashamed of themselves. I mean, that was a joke. And I know the Astros have good pitching. We saw this in the World Series years ago. They have great pitching, especially with the starting pitcher the first game and the third game, and Brown's an all-star. So that I'm not shocked they got held down. I didn't think they were going to go to Houston and score 10 runs a game. But that's ugly baseball. I mean, that is ugly baseball yesterday, the whole week. It is a tragedy that those three starting pitchers went out there. I mean, Sanchez was awesome yesterday. Off of the week they had with their starting pitchers, we should have been able to come on here today after they won the series and said, wow, this is the best pitching staff since 11. This is one of the best starting pitching rotations we've ever had in Philadelphia. They could ride this to a World Series. Instead, it's all the crap you feel when they lose like this. They should be ashamed of themselves. Hugh, that was a disgusting offensive effort by the Phillies. There's a lot of issues here. I mean, Hugh, there are a lot of issues. And the biggest one to me, from a numbers perspective, is they just don't hit home runs. Like, it's really hard against good pitching to have a situation where you're trying to string together hit after hit after walk after hit. It's hard to put big innings together. So other than Schwarber, there's no power right now. They got mowed down, and it was like boom, boom, boom in the ninth inning. What a tough week after. I felt for the first time all year, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna get fully on board. I'm gonna believe after they beat the Mets. And they go out there and make me look like a fool in Houston. That stunk, Hugh, all series long against the Astros.
Yeah. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I look at it like this. It's eerily similar to a couple of other moments that I've seen with this team. You know, and this is what I was talking about. I'm not being I told you so, Douglas.
Oh, here we go.
But they reverted to what they were comfortable with, chasing pitches, trying to knock it out of the park, and all of that, and that's what it got you. Got you one run in five games.
Three.
Wait a minute. What did I say? Five. Well, yeah. My mind's all over the place. But you know,
it's okay.
Three games.
They only allowed five runs and lost all three. That was probably in your head.
Yeah, allowed five. Yeah. It looks the same, and this is what it looks like for the most part in the playoffs. Hero ball. Somebody's out there trying to be the one to get them out of the slump instead of moving runners and doing what we all say they need to do when it's like that, when you're facing good pitching. That's what it was.
Well, it was that all week, and it wasn't good enough all week. And 215-592-9494, for your reaction to the Phillies getting swept by the Astros, the way they did it without scoring. But I do – sometimes there's the big problem, and sometimes there's an underlying problem. And I think we all realize the big problem right now is they're not hitting, right? They're not hitting. They're not hitting for power. They're 16th in baseball in home runs. We're at the halfway point of the season now. They have one player in double digits with home runs. One. That's Schwarber at 24. They're on pace to have only one guy, the guy that's already there, even get to 20 home runs this season. It's not the kind of offense that wins the World Series, but that's the big problem. But, you know, Hugh, sometimes there's underlying problems with teams, and I have to say something that I have not been willing and ready to say for a while now, even though in the back of my mind I've noticed a trend that's not good. I have been, since the minute he took over, Rob Thompson guy. Rob Thompson, I've liked him since he took over as the manager here. And obviously he got a lot of out of that 2022 team. Mm-hmm. And I didn't blame him for what happened last year in the postseason. They just again went cold. I thought he was more at fault in 2023, not in 2022. But overall, I've been a topper guy. But Hugh, I'm starting to see some signs here that the team may have tuned this guy out or is on the verge of tuning this guy out. And with that, he's starting to lose me a little bit. Let me give you a couple facts here. One quote and one fact. All right, so I said last week when the whole Castellanos thing went down that I didn't love it because I was afraid he was going to lose Castellanos, right? Like, whether or not Castellanos was right or wrong or whatever you came down on that, I was concerned he was going to lose the player, right? And that, you can't lose your players because they're the ones that need to perform. So since that issue with Castellanos and Topper, Nick Castellanos has swung at the first pitch in 25 of his 34 plate appearances. He's gone back to being the, I'm going to do my own thing, Nick Castellanos. Mm-hmm. That's not what you want. And then I saw this quote yesterday after the game. Max Kepler, the 209 hitting left fielder, who has been a dud from Dabrowski, okay? He said this after the game, and we know it was his first time starting yesterday after a few days off, right? Because they were facing lefties. Topper doesn't play him against lefties. So after the game, quote from Max Kepler. The biggest challenge for me is not playing routinely. That's the biggest challenge. Further, reporter writes, this is from Matt Kelby, The Athletic. Kepler was under the impression he would. And here's the quote. Yeah, he said, I was told I was going to be the starting left fielder.
Mm.
Okay, so whether or not you think Kepler's worthy of playing every day, I don't. The guy has been a dud here. Hugh, the issue is this is now two players in 2 weeks that have publicly said something about Topper. One was Castellanos yelling enough, saying something enough that it became a thing, right? And then the second one is Max Kepler basically saying, he told me he would play me every day, he lied to me. I mean, I'm editorializing that, but that's what he said.
I mean, basically, in a nutshell, that's what was said.
I was told this, and this is the way it's been. I can't find my timing because of it. Whether or not you think Castellanos and Kepler are on the right, the issue is we have players here now, in effect, saying some stuff about the manager. I am concerned that Topper's losing the clubhouse. And Topper's starting to lose me. I think his consistency has not been there this year. I don't love the way he manages late in games with his bullpen. And I just think that the players are starting to doubt him. And, Hugh, if the players are starting to doubt him and he's not a great strategist, what do we have here with the manager then? I don't know. I mean, he's starting to lose me. Is he losing you?
He's not losing me. It's unfortunate that the guy that has the most to say is the guy that just got here and is not playing well.
Mm-hmm.
But it does speak to me that there is probably some dissension in the ranks that, you know, guys are chirping a little bit. And because he's hasn't been here that long and he feels like he's been told a lie, that he has the most to say.
Yep.
And then you take that with what Cassiano said. Well, what happened last week? Not so much what he said, but what happened. And you have some concern whether or not they're tuning Topper out. But to answer your question, Joe, I don't think this is Topper's fault. It's the players' fault. Because when I watch the games and I watch good pitching that they go against, it's the same thing that I saw against Arizona. Same thing that I saw against the Mets. They revert to the mean. That's what I was telling you about.
It's who they are.
Remember we talked about not too long ago how great they looked. Oh, they're moving runners over. They're playing small ball. They're doing this and that. When it hits the fan and it gets tough and you face really good pitching, they play hero ball.
So I'm going to throw in a football analogy at you. You're right that it does look a lot like, let's say, 2022 in the World Series, 2023. When they go cold, they chase, right? It goes bad.
Yes.
You know what the difference with those two teams were, though, a few years ago? These players were a little bit better then,
mm-hmm.
and they would at least hit some home runs to counteract the issues, right? So they would go cold, but they also could get red. This team doesn't hit home runs. So this is almost like watching a football offense that is dink and dunk without any big plays. They get holding penalties, but they can't make a big play. I don't know how they fix this. The Dabrowski better go get a bat by the deadline. But on top of all of it, and the way they played the last couple days, I just am concerned that Topper is losing the clubhouse. And ultimately, his job is to get the most out of the players. I mean, that's his job. Again, we don't have Tony La Russa here. I mean, I never thought he was an amazing strategist in the dugout. But the players seem to like him, respond to him, play well for him, get the best out of them. If they're questioning him, what are we doing with the manager here? 215-592-9494. All right, who are you most frustrated with right now? The players who have just had an awful week, that offense. Or is it the manager who clearly players are frustrated with, and I don't think he's getting the most out of them right now? Where do you come down? 215-592-9494. Then this from Kepler, from Rob Thompson yesterday. He did, though, sound like a guy we remember well, Gabe Kepler. Listen to this quote yesterday from Rob Thompson after the game on why there's so many issues with the offense right now.
Beyond trying to make too much out of three games, do you see any deeper trends with how your offense has performed that maybe stick out to you as concerning? Or
It's the old thing that I talk about all the time, trying to do too much. That's the thing that concerns me the most, and that's just because they care.
Now there it is. They just they care so much.
Compassionate, competitive man.
I haven't heard that voice on WIP in a while. Yeah,
love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, there it is. All right, 215-592-9494. Rob Thompson's starting to lose me because I think he's starting to lose them. I don't think he's a markedly worse manager than he was 2 or 3 years ago, but if he's starting to lose them, and I don't love the strategy half the time late in the games, I don't, like, what are we getting out of the manager right now that's making the team better? Kyle, where do you come down as the Phillies are swept out of Houston, even though their starting pitching was brilliant all three games?
Yeah, I mean, is the messaging getting stale to the players? It might be. But I need Max Kepler to shut up, look deep within, go take a look in the mirror.
Deep within.
Buddy. Like, I'm sorry. This whole thing with Nick Castellanos, with Max Kepler, how they're frustrated with their roles. You know what would make this a non-issue?
If they were better?
If they were better players.
Yeah.
I mean, Max Kepler can force the issue and make it so that Rob Thompson has to start him every day. He sucked. He's been terrible. I mean, Nick Castellanos is what he is. And, like, the defense thing, I know it's dropped off, all that. Castellanos still deserves to be in the lineup every day. But, like, Max Kepler, shut your mouth, dude. Like, the players have to be better. And I know they're not hitting home runs. They haven't hit home runs all season long, save for Kyle Schwarber.
Right.
But Rob Thompson can't make them hit home runs. Like, this is not, to me, this is not a Rob Thompson issue. It's just a fundamentally flawed offense. We know they're inconsistent. We know they'll probably get hot again. But this whole thing about their approach looking like it's changed throughout the season, it looks like it's nonsense right now, because these are the times. Like, it's easy to change your approach when you're going up against a tomato can.
Yeah.
Like a Cal Quantrill.
Yep.
Right?
I took a spray.
Yeah. It's easy to change your approach when you're going up against a guy like that. But when you got Hunter Brown, who's leading the AL in ERA, that's where push comes to shove. That's where you need to nut up, and that's where you really need to, like, chase him from the game. You're not gonna tag him all over the baseball field. You're not gonna put up five runs on him. But you can take enough pitches, you can extend your at bats, and you can be selective enough to the point where he's out of the game in, you know, maybe say the sixth inning, and then all of a sudden you're dealing with a bullpen who, I know the Astros have a good bullpen, but it just makes it a little bit easier on you. Like, the fact that the players can't collectively go into a game and say, our approach needs to be this. This is how we need to attack this. Like, it tells me that, and Topper's saying they care. Maybe they care about themselves individually. Like, I'm going to be the guy that hits a home run and saves the day. But if you care truly, like, I'm calling BS on the they care thing. Because if they care about the team and if they care about winning, then they'll do the pass the baton thing that they've talked about. Like, this to me is all on the players.
215-592-9494. Where's your frustration right now as the Phillies get swept? It really, if I'm an offensive player on this team, if I'm a position player, I'm like lowering my eyes as I walk past the pitchers in the dugout the next couple days. I mean, you ruined this week. That was special pitching out of Suarez, Wheeler, and Sanchez. That was the best I've seen Sanchez the entire season. They walk out of there with three losses. It's a joke. It is a joke. If they don't win this division and they lose it by one or two or three games, I'm going to point back to this series. They got dynamite starting pitching and nothing else. 215-592-9494. Look, Rob Thompson is starting to lose me here for a few reasons. Number one, lack of consistency all year with the way he's managed his team. Number two, now players speaking out. This is not a good thing. Players start getting mouthy about the manager. It means that the player's got to go or the manager's got to go. And I don't think he's getting the best out of these guys. I mean, which players are we getting the best out of this year? I would say Turner and Schwarber. Is that it? I mean, from the offense. I think that's it. I think this is probably the best Trey Turner could be at this point of his career. Schwarber's obviously awesome. Everybody else, I feel, is down. No one's gotten better. I mean, I don't think the guy's a bad manager, but Hugh, you said it, and it's in the back of my mind. Sometimes the message gets stale, and I'm wondering if that's happening.
See,
doesn't mean it's his fault. That doesn't mean he's a bad manager.
See, I don't think that's the case. You know what I think this is? Meet with my reckless speculation.
Oh,
I think that this is a situation where, you got two guys, and you might have a few others, but I think the core guys are still Topper guys. You got a few guys that are happy with the roles that they're in, and misery loves company. And, you know, you talk about Castellanos chirping the way that he did last week, and the guy I think is, we used to call them locker room lawyers.
Yeah.
You just call them, like, you can't have a whole bunch of locker room lawyers in there. Sounds to me like Max Kepler is being a locker room lawyer.
Well, with that, you said chirping. We did bring this up last week. Remember when he kept Castellanos in for defense the night after with the whole blow-up?
Yeah.
And I wondered then, like, wait a second. Does that mean other players could feel like they can yell and scream and get their way?
Yeah.
I think that's what Max Kepler's doing.
Yeah, locker room lawyer.
Yeah, Max Kepler saw Castellanos last week, mouth off when he got pulled out of a game, and then he got to stay. I don't believe Castellanos has been pulled out for defense since that happened. So Topper said it's going to happen again. I haven't seen it in a week. And now Max Kepler obviously wants to play every day, and he's talking now about how they've lied to him about his role. So my thing is he's probably trying to get to play every day by mouthing off.
Now, here's the thing that could potentially be detrimental is if Topper is, you know, doing that to appease people, you know, because then guys see that and then it starts to become unraveled.
Let's watch for this. The next time they face a lefty, is Kepler in the game? Because he hasn't played against lefties the entire year. If he's in the game, then we've found the way to unlock. Get what you want around here. Just yell at Rob Thompson. I mean, you just get whatever the hell you want. 215-592-9494. Jeff in Wilmington is up. What's up, Jeff?
Jeff.
What's up, guys?
Hey, Jeff.
So I think this is more on, I agree with Kyle, more on the players, specifically the non-pitchers. Because, and even the guys on the bullpen are not brutal. They're not great right now, but, man, you're wasting so much good starting pitching. It was really enjoyable to watch that series, except for the fact that nobody hit on the Phillies.
So, it was great. I mean, it was amazing. That was the best, man. I've seen Sanchez pitch the entire season. He was dominant yesterday.
Awesome. It was awesome. You know, Kepler really does need to not talk. Dude, you're hitting like 200, and you're complaining about playing, and you were promised something. Well, how about you promise us some hits? How about you get some hits and get your average up to 250? Then maybe you can play every day against lefties as well.
It is rich when you see the quotes from him. He basically didn't have a hit the whole month of May, and he's pouting off about not being an everyday player.
Yeah,
but
that's strong.
Yeah, it is. It is strong.
But Joe, do you think, and Hugh, do you think these guys would react if they brought in another manager who's going to shake things up, as they say, flip some tables? Like, is that even going to work now? Like, that's what I'm worried about. So ultimately, I think it's on Dombrowski for keeping the same team without bringing anybody else in.
Well, I think you're right on that. Yeah, and Jeff, we appreciate the phone call. Obviously, Dombrowski takes a big L for the Kepler thing. I mean, seriously. That was their offseason addition offensively, and he stinks. I mean, he thinks he'd be better if he played every day. I want him to play less. I want a new left fielder in here. But that's what the GM brought in.
I think it's kind of rich that, you know, you're in a position where you feel like you need to be given more.
Yeah, more at-bats.
Yeah, and even when you're not really doing a whole lot. That's rich. And the timing that you pick to say something.
I know. It makes me – I guess the word is I'm concerned there's more of this bubbling under the surface, now we got two players
and that's what you, that's
being
what,
chesty
that's
about
what it.
That's
what it is. It's you have some individuals back there. I mean, that feel like they're being slighted in some way. You know, and then it goes back to Casty's significant other tweeting as well. You know, I mean, seriously, think about it. You're laying in the bed at night pillow talking about how you should be given more. And, you know, she loves him. She hears that, and she echoes his sentiment. And then she gets on Twitter and gets Twitter fingers.
Yeah, listen, we are dealing with a situation now where the Phillies have a pitching staff, a starting pitching staff, good enough to win the World Series, obviously. The offense isn't good enough. Dombrowski has to fix that. But is the manager now part of the issue, too, and the way the players are responding? 215-592-9849. For Rob Thompson, he's starting to lose me because I feel like he's losing that clubhouse. I go back to even a couple nights ago when we talked about him letting Rojas hit in the ninth inning. Now, was that right? Was that wrong? I thought it was wrong. But you know who was on the bench that night? Kepler, sitting there probably saying, give me a shot here. You brought me here to hit home runs. Give me a shot here. And he didn't do it. I mean, the players are clearly questioning the manager. That's not good. All right, I think he's losing the clubhouse. The signs are there. Hugh thinks it's all in the players. Where do you come down? Your call's next. Plus, we got something fun going on tonight. We'll tell you the tri-day off of that next. It is the Midday Show. 215-592-9494. Your phone call's next on Sports Radio 94 WIP.